Bad days at work.
Shitty people.
Internet trolls.
Breakups.
Obesity.
Stress.
Depression.
Grief.
Divorce.
Anxiety.
Road rage.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
We all have to deal with the rigors of life and its random occurrences.
Join author Nicholas Cruz and Allison Morgan.
Friends for nearly 20 years.
As they share unbelievable tales of bad days, stressful mishaps,
and lessons learned in a way that shares a bit of heart and encouragement.
Welcome to the Tall, Dark, and Random Podcast. Podcast.
Hit record just because. Yeah, fuck the cold, first of all. I'm so sick of it. Like, every time it's even remotely cold, I'm like, man, I'm fucking leaving here because I hate this stupid state.
And you moved there willingly. Like, you willingly made the decision.
Fucking idiot, dude. God.
Is my shit recording?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't tell ever on this end. And I was like, it's been so long since we've done a podcast that, like, I don't even remember how it works anymore.
Dude, Zencaster like updated their software and their programming too. So I'm like trying to figure out how to start an episode. I'm like, I don't know how. Where is it?
We could literally be talking to nobody right now.
But maybe we are.
Maybe we are nobodies.
Uh-oh. I mean, really, you think about it, the world is a big place and we're all just a little tiny ant in this whole huge thing.
Very, very vast. If you could be anything in the world, what would you be? Like, if you had to be an animal or another being that wasn't a human being, what would you pick?
Man. I would just want to, I think I would be some sort of animal that just was like born to chill, you know, and like they were
like a dog.
Yeah. You know, like I don't want to be like, everyone's like, oh, I'd be a fucking cheetah and I'd go out and I'd kill all these fucking animals and people and stuff. I'm like, nah, I'm not about that. Just let me be a dog that doesn't bark.
I work way too hard in my fucking human life to be a cheetah reincarnated. Yeah,
I'm not down with that. And I don't want to have to run and be out in the heat. Like, I just need a nice temperature controlled environment where I don't have to worry about anything.
I asked my dad that question once. I just asked him, like, hey, if you could be anything else, what would you be? And he was like, I'd just be a human. And he was trying to get me to leave him alone. But finally, he's like, fine, I'd be a bug and I'd crawl on someone so they could get this over with.
Oh, God.
All right, Dad.
Okay, I'll just write that down in case we need to come back to it.
I'm going to put polar bear.
Yeah, it's actually for school. I'm trying to get a good grade. Well, how was the move?
The move was absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrendous. For anybody listening, it's been about, what, a year?
Yeah, I think so.
Almost a year since we have spoken with an audience that wasn't just me talking to my children, like, who have no clue what I'm talking about. I got woes, but, like, my bartender is 2 years old, and he doesn't serve me anything. He just brings me random things and says, cheers. So it's like fucking two pieces of Raisin Bran, cheers, you know, a piece of paper, cheers, a sticker, cheers. So I haven't talked to a lot of adults, but my move, basically what happened with us was we were told to move out of our house very quickly because the person who owned it needed to sell it. And so we made this jaunt all the way to Austin in the middle of the school year. We were going to just like get an apartment and stick it out in Arkansas and try to find something over the summer or just move over the summer. And we just kind of made this leap of faith, came to Austin, and we're broke as shit right now. And that sucks. But other than that, it's great. And I'm glad we've done it. Like, as far as the move, it was terrible. Had to leave a bunch of stuff behind, got the truck 3/4 of the way full and realized we had way too much shit. We'd accumulated 2 children in the span of time we'd lived there. Yep. And I don't know if you know this. You probably do because you have kids, but they have a lot of shit. So much shit. And we get to the end of it, and I'm like, okay, it's coming down to my, you know, Sports Illustrated collector glasses or Dennison's crib. And Sarah made me take the crib, so, you know, right. Yeah, here we are. Like,
very carefully put the glasses in there. She's like, no, Nick. The crib. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Goodbye, Sports Illustrated football phone I got for getting a subscription in 1994. You know. I haven't hooked it up in years, but I'd intended to, and now I'll never get the chance again.
You're never going to have a chance.
But no, it was awful, man. We get moved here. We kind of get separated. Sarah's brother and I ended up driving the truck up here with all the shit in it. So we were about 4 hours ahead of them. And in my head, I'm like, we're down the road and Sarah's going to call me about halfway. When we do this trip by ourselves, we usually stop and stay in Texarkana. So I was not surprised when Sarah called me and was like, I have both kids, so I'm going to stop for the night and stay here. So Sarah and her mom were with the kids and they start like stop and stay in Texarkana. And seemed like they had this like cozy little ride back because they get here or like we get here with the car on a tow on the back of the U-Haul and Sarah has the car keys and my backpack with my fresh clothes are in her purse. So I had no way to get into my car to get the stuff I needed. So I basically had to take a shower and then put on like my clothes again that I had just moved in. And stay the night. And the next day we wake up and she's taking her time getting back here. So I end up having to unload the stuff that needs to go in the house here and rather than the stuff that needs to go in the unit. I had to unload that stuff here with the car on a tow on the back going around all of that crap. So then we go to move the stuff into the unit when she finally gets here, which, by the way, you ate Cracker Barrel without me and I'm never letting it go, Sarah. But anyway.
She seriously did that?
She did that to be no Cracker Barrel, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
But no, we finally go to unload the stuff and actually had some help. Like Sarah's brother came to help and her cousin Bobby, and it was actually not too bad. But of course it's the one day they have a cold snap here. So it's about 9 degrees and windy and just terrible. And the next day we wake up, it's like 60 degrees out. And Sarah's dad tells me like, oh, well, yeah, I guess that was the cold snap was yesterday when you had to unload the truck.
Okay. All right.
Everything else has just been like an amalgam of kind of dealing with the emotions from moving. Like it was just like when my dad passed away, like I had no time to think about anything. So it was like, I got here and then the depression set in, you know, we're sitting on the floor. I'm like, hey, I think we're doing all right. And then my son is like, we go home to our house and play in my room. And I just lose it. You know, it's like he doesn't understand it's not a trip and he's starting to get there where he's like okay with it, but it's like he's two and I know it's like in the grand scheme of things he's not going to remember most of this in a few years. Yeah. But I'm taking it very much to heart, like I failed in a way, or I mean we really didn't, like this is actually a good thing even though it's been a very slow process, like getting hired and you know getting paid again and all this crap. But
yeah, but it's definitely not a failure. You guys were not, well, like you and I had talked maybe a year, year and a half ago about you guys had ambitions to move to Austin. And then, you know, like circumstances beyond your control happen. So you don't really have a choice. And I mean, honestly, as someone outside looking in, you made the better choice of the two than staying in Bitters, Arkansas, and waiting for Henry Godwin to tag you in for a match or something.
I don't really know. Like, it's so weird, too. It's like it was such a shock being back amongst, like, regular people because I'd been in Arkansas for so long. It's like this is the first time I've ever gone to the store and everyone's wearing shoes. And, you know, it's not like a goddamn Carhartt party every time I, like, roll in somewhere. Like, I'm not used to being, like, I'm used to rolling in somewhere and being the oddball out, you know, like, rolling in somewhere. And they're like, Dickie Shorts, brown skin, what is this? You know, like.
But dude, Austin is a very cool city.
It is. It really is. Like, we've been here for a month now. And, like, I've already, like, decided I'm probably not leaving here, you know.
Yeah.
First off, the move was awful. And do I really want to do that in 6 months again?
No.
Or do I just want to stay here and go to shows and smoke weed and enjoy my life and be a parent and, you know, just continue?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I would say the biggest positive is we've started doing this again. Like, we're going to keep up with it. And I don't know, man. This really just opened like a big fucking like chest of things in my head that I've kind of just put away and thought, I'll do it later. You know, I'm not ready. And now I've kind of gotten to this point where I'm like, I have to do something and I have to be ready and I have to just get in and get my feet wet. And we may as well just talk about it on here. But I announced this week finally that I'm well into writing a book about the Garden City scene. I've got a lot of stuff written down. I've got the parts I want to do written down. And now it's just going through and interviewing everybody. And like, just seeing what everybody remembers. And I'm going to do that, like, just until the book is done, I think. Like, all the mm-hmm. interviews are going to go on a podcast. That way, my tracks are fucking covered. If anybody's like, oh, I never said that. Or, you know, yeah. That's bullshit, Nick. That's not how it happened. Because there's always somebody, man. Like, I cannot, like, go outside and belch into the air without somebody, like, having a complaint about me doing something. So... this covers my tracks. It includes everybody, gets everybody involved. And I was going to talk to you about it. We could just talk about it here on the podcast. But yeah. I was planning on something maybe over the summer, going back to Garden, getting all this old merch I've collected, all these old CDs, all these old flyers, like things you've sent me, making some reels out of them. And just going back and like having a 20th anniversary Bad Guy reunion show where we have a mixture of old and new. And we do a little thing I want to set up at the library and like have a little exhibit where everybody can come out and check out all the scene relics and different things that I've collected. Because, dude, it is a lot of stuff. And as far as everyone else is concerned, like I've got a lot of people who are willing to put things on loan that I know are great pieces and great things that, you know, people want to come out and see, man. But it depresses me. Like the people who are keeping the scene alive in Southwest Kansas are bands like Ether and the Merkins. And like, there are a lot of good bands and like good people, but they're all like upper age. It's not kids anymore. It's not teenagers like making bands and like going out and having the aspirations to put on shows and do things and, you know, forge ahead. It's become more of like the people who were forging ahead 10 years ago are way forged ahead and are doing even bigger things now. But it's hurting. The scene is just like, you know, not what it used to be. And it would just be really cool to chronicle that time and, you know, have a book where everybody can read about these people who had the ability to do superhuman things and great things as far as like musicians do. They just never had the place to bloom. You know, it's like, really hard to grow a band that goes on tour and does anything in fucking the middle of nowhere of Kansas. But for a few years there, man, about 10 years there, we had this window where our scene was just this beautiful stop in the middle of Denver in Kansas City for all these bands who went on to do crazy things. Like we've talked about it on the pod a lot. We had Mayday Parade sleeping in your basement.
Right. You know, we did. Yeah.
At one point we were starting a little label and we got demos from bands like Four Letter Lie, who went on to sign with Victory, or Adara, who we were thinking about signing, who like went on to sign with the Sloppy Meat Eaters label, Orange Peel.
Yep.
And like, I mean, there was all these people doing like incredible things in our scene and we're stopping through. And I remember, I'll never forget, like, we were doing a show at Hallie's house one night and her dad was outside just kind of chilling. And a neighbor came up like complaining to him. He's like, you got all these kids here. They're just like partying. And he's like, these kids are not partying. Like they're down there listening to music. Like, would you rather have these kids like out doing something stupid or just like in an area where you can keep an eye on them knowing that they're not doing anything stupid?
Correct.
And he starts explaining to these guys that like, hey, it was the night we had that, or it was like one of the shows where we had had one of the guys in the band who had told us he was going to be a doctor. And like he had told Hallie's dad that. And he was like, you understand there's like a John Hopkins student down there playing music in my basement right now. Mm-hmm. Like these are not kids who are out
to
do anything stupid. But I don't know, man, we just had all of these like amazing times playing shows and, you know, rewatching the videos that you sent me of everything. Like, it's just incredible to see that time just open back up and happen. And like, I don't know, man, I don't know anybody else who would ever tackle a project like this as far as like writing a book about the scene. And I just feel like I have to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And
well, you know, and I think part of it too is whenever we had a legitimate transition from the world of the Garden City scene, like when you first came up into it, like the Mad Apples and the bands like that, you know, FBF and all that. And I think we just came in at a good time to where we understood that that era was starting to end and that we knew that we were the next in line. You know, it was like transitioning from the golden era to the attitude era. And it was something that we just kind of fell in at the right time. But it didn't happen that way after we started to fade out, you know, like once we all just kind of disappeared, then it just wasn't there and there was no guidance. There was no connections. There was nothing. It was just, okay, it's yours now. See ya. You know?
I think it was a lot too, as far as when we would do stuff, it was just steady all the time. Like, I don't remember more than 2 weeks ever going by where we weren't throwing a show or we weren't changing it up. Like when we had a hardcore show, we'd be like, shit, we should probably have a show, you know, with some screamo bands or with somebody like an indie band or something, or mix it up a little. And like, I think we kind of got, we did well for a minute. And then I think our big problem was we just overloaded. Like we started like feeling like we had to commit to everything that was asked of us.
Yeah.
And then we started, I remember around the end, we had this one period of time where I was just looking at flyers and realizing, dude, we had three shows in like 11 days time. And like, you cannot keep people coming back that way, you know, like, but it was like, we felt like, oh, every time Rookie comes in, we have to bring Rookie out. We have to bring in Glass Houses every time they're coming through. And it became a thing where we just stopped saying no and said yes all the time. And every time we got a little money stacked up to do anything, we just blew it because it like went into another show automatically.
Yeah. Yeah. But goddamn, I think,
what a ride.
It was so much fun. I mean, looking back on it, it was so much fun. And I think if we would have, prepared ourselves a little bit better and really understood, instead of like bringing ourselves into all these different directions, like, okay, we're going to do a label, but we're also going to put on shows, but we're also going to do this and do that. Like, I think if we got a little more focused on what we wanted to do, then I think we could have sustained that for a lot longer. And especially the label. I think we really could have made the label a legitimate thing and been successful with that. But again, it's just one of those things that, you know, as life changes and those transitions in life happen, it just like for me, I just started losing time, like the ability to do all these things and to help out and everything because of, you know, school and work and all this stuff. And I knew that my priorities were shifting and I wasn't going to be able to be all in like I was in the past.
Yeah. That's kind of my thing. I was just exhausted with it and I moved away and never thought about it again. You know,
yeah.
I ran Bad Guy after I left Garden as a, like a booking platform. And I did exactly what I did with what we did with the shows. Like I just overloaded. I committed to too much because too much was changing. And as far as like, that was where I made my mistake, I think, was like, I didn't change with it. You know, I wanted to do things the way I always had and I was very stubborn about it. And so it just didn't work out the same way. Like the shows I was getting bands were worse than they were before, but not because I was bad at it. It was because things had just changed all over.
Yeah.
And it's like you get somebody a show and 10 people show up, you know, it's not like shows they'd played in their hometown. So I had this one band, I never really like opened up about it, but they were called like Bless Me Ultima and they were really good dudes. Like a lot of them were very nice kids, but these dudes go out on tour and call me one night and are all pissed off because they got to a show and got paid like $20, but there was like 11 bands on the bill or something. Just beyond my control. All I did was book the fucking show and give them the show. And then it turned into a situation where they're upset and they were going to book some more shows. And I was like, I'll just send you fucking money back and you can just be done. We can just be done working together, you know, whatever. And I carried around a lot of guilt. And then I started thinking about like contractually, I did everything I was supposed to do. I went above and beyond. I was at their beck and call when they needed to call. And that was the problem, was I wasn't saying no to them ever. Like, hey, man, you need to fucking figure this out. Like this kid was telling me on the phone, I could have booked this myself. And I felt tremendously bad. I'm like, maybe this kid could have. I had no confidence in myself whatsoever. And then the more I thought about it over the years, I'm like, fuck this dude.
Yeah.
You know? If you were going to fucking do it and you could have done it, you would have fucking done
it. You would have done it. You wouldn't have even called me. Yeah.
And then I got to fucking say, man, this motherfucker, like there were three of these dudes in this band were brothers or some shit from some bumfuck town in like Nebraska or whatever. And like these people who had thrown like some local shows in their fucking dinky ass town like we did hit me up like telling me like how to book tours. And I'm like, I don't think you fucking have ever done this one day in your life, you know? Yeah. But I let it go and just went on with my life and left it alone. But like, as I've been kind of reopening like things and doing this project, I'm opening a lot of old wounds and realizing like, ah, these aren't hurting me the way they used to. And I need to talk about them and I need to like open up about it and let people know what happened. And, you know, 'cause I take a lot of fucking flack from motherfuckers who don't like me. You know, just getting passed around, getting to be the fucking subject of everybody's fucking conversation at timeout or whatever the fuck it is. And I don't know, man. I feel like I just took the biggest L of my motherfucking life, having to move us in fucking 60 days. And I'm just not afraid to fight anymore. You know, I'm just going to get in there, get my hands dirty. We're going to have a book about the Garden City scene, and you're going to be able to fucking read about it forever.
Yeah. You bitch.
Bitches.
Bitches. Hey, man. If, but honestly, dude, like, if there's anybody that's even talking shit right now at timeout, like, your life ain't well, that much better.
Yeah, and that, dude, that's the kind of thing. Like, I say, I talk a big fucking game, but really, like, I've actually had a lot of, like, healing and things that I've kind of, like, been dealing with as far as, like, internal battles. And then I just started, like, you know, I really have started trying to change perspective and, like, look at other people's perspectives. And so I start looking at people who don't like me, and especially in the scene, and people that I came up alongside. And I have started thinking, like, maybe more people feel like I do, you know? Like, I feel very insecure sometimes when I'm doing things, especially when I'm the newbie, or, like, I feel like I don't fit in. Like, when I go to other hip-hop scenes and I, you know, have to play with this a bunch of people who are in this scene and know everyone, and I don't know anybody.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of weird, you know? Like, I don't go up to people and just start, hey, yo, what's up? Oh, what's up, man? Like, and I'm not very boisterous. I just like to play my music and sell my things and go to bed, you know? Right. Like, that's... So it's really weird for me, but I start putting myself in, like, other people's shoes, and, like, I start thinking, like, okay, when I've seen certain people in our scene play and I know they're good, I get a little threatened. And it's not, like, in a bad way. Like, it's just a competitive way, you know, but it becomes a bad way when you're afraid to compete, or you're afraid to get in there and play the game because someone's better than you. And I think that's where I've succeeded, where other people have failed, is I don't give a shit if I fail, you know?
It's right, like, exactly.
I just want to be in the game. It's never been about being the best or beating people. It's just, you know, been about earning respect and being, like, treated well and being in the scene. And you know, for me, when I was in high school, it was really bad because I was a little shit talker and kind of a little fucker. And that carried on for a few years, but... Who among us wasn't that way in high school, you know?
Exactly.
But well, I look back on that stuff. It was like, I was very confident about things I shouldn't have been confident about. And people bought into it sometimes because I was just confident. And, you know, now it's like, people could support me all day long, and I'd still be like, oh my God, I suck at everything. You know. But then the next day I wake up and I create something and I sell it, you know, and that's
exactly.
So I don't know, man. I've just been trying to get some perspective and like see other people's perspectives, because I'm sure they just feel like me. Like, they see, you know, especially big dudes or dudes who kind of look like me. You know, I'm sure they see me and they're like, I'm the fat guy in this scene. What the fuck? You know, and because that's how I feel. I'm like, I'm the only me here, but this guy's kind of like me, you know, and I don't know. Does that make any sense?
It does. Yeah. But it's also like putting a lot of pressure on yourself that doesn't necessarily have to be there, you know?
It is. And I'm trying to learn to not do that. And like the last few years, I've been a lot better about it. Like, I don't really care what anyone else is doing. And that's not a slight on anyone. Like, I'm going to root for your fucking projects. And if you post it, I'll share it. And, you know, if I don't see it, I don't share it. So don't think that's, you know, I'm not on social media all the fucking time. Send it to me and I'll share it. But like... What I'm getting at is more so, have I lost my train of thought? I'm high as balls. So
balls.
You don't help me. This is like an Amtrak train kind of sliding off the tracks and you just walk over and push it over. Like, that's
I'm helping.
I'm just trying not to feel so slighted, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like, anytime anybody's mad at me or criticizes how I do things, I'm just like, I don't fucking care, because there's plenty of people who like what I do, and, you know.
Dude, yeah, I'm the same way, man. I just don't feel at this point in my life that really I only value the opinions of a select few people. Everyone else, fuck them, because I just don't have time for it. I don't have the energy to try and fight or disagree or argue with you over an issue that you're obviously not going to hear my point of view from, and I'm listening to yours, but you don't give a shit what I have to say. So I just am not going to put forth the effort, and I'm going to go on and figure out the things that I need to do to be successful and to help me go in the right direction. And that's it. And then you just prioritize that kind of stuff. And it's just like prioritizing the things in your life outside of work or whatever. It's just like we had so many things on the table all those years ago. And now like everything is so condensed, and it's like, well, fuck, we both have families now, and that's what's so important. And like everything else, it can come and go as it pleases. And if it stays, great. If it doesn't, then that's it. That was the moment in time that we needed it, and now it's gone. Just move on.
I think that's how I know this is the right project for the next writing project, because the first thing I thought was, what a cool thing for my kids to be able to read someday. Mm-hmm. You know, like they're going to know me like that. My favorite thing about, you know, like kind of healing in my process of grief with my father dying and everything. One of my favorite things in all of this is like how people I don't even know who knew my dad before I was born, like have reached out and told me stories. Cause I feel like I know my dad differently now.
Yep.
You know, it's like you start hearing all these little stories that you never heard about. Oh, your dad like fucking ripped his pants hopping a fence. And like, it makes me feel good. Cause I looked at my dad as like a superhero, like couldn't be phased, couldn't be stopped, you know? And that's who he was to me, because that's who he had to be. Like, he had to be the dad, and he had to be the, you know, guy who took care of everything. But like, then I hear all these stories, I'm like, man, my dad was a sensitive guy. My dad like felt bad when he did stupid shit sometimes. Mm-hmm. And my dad does the same dumb thing. My dad split his pants on the fence like I have, you know. It's just like, it really humanizes him as a person. Like, I always saw him differently than I do now. Like, I, you know, now I feel like we could have been friends more so than just, you know, father and son. Like, there was respect there, and but I respect him in different ways now. Like, I just see that, you know, everything he did for me, like, was putting on a, you know, a mask sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure he was just like me, scared as fuck sometimes, and just thought, oh, I'm failing miserably, and, you know, well, those rafters are looking pretty good right now, you know, like, but he just got up every day and worked hard and just did the next thing. And, you know, I think he'd be proud that, like, I've spent so much time working on things I loved, because I don't think he got the opportunity to do that a lot of the time.
Right.
With the amount of work he had to put in to just keep us afloat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced this too, but the conversations that we have in our own rooms behind closed doors, where we don't have to be that perfect father figure and that, you know, have all the answers and all the things that need to be done. Like, I know that I've done it where I just feel like I'm failing. Yeah. And even if it's something very minor and it's not going to affect the overall makeup of my family, I just feel like it's almost an expectation in my mind that, oh, I need to work all this time and do all this stuff because it's what provides for the family. It's not because I love it. It's because it's like my job. It's my job's job to do that, you know?
What is can you tell us like an expectation you've had for yourself that was like, you were just like, wow, this is dumb. Why am I even worried about this?
Yeah, I think most recently it's been just trying to understand my future and my profession. Like, I have a lot of opportunities that are kind of presenting themselves, and I'm just hesitant to capitalize on any of those. And it all comes down to the fact there's a high likelihood that my schedule would change tremendously, to where I would be working overnights and I would not be seeing the family even, you know, a quarter of as much as I do now. And like, that kind of stuff is important to me. And, but I just feel like I'm at that point in my career where I need to be doing these things and making these moves. But at the same time, I'm also somewhat content with where I'm at. but I still put a lot of pressure on myself to look at it like, well, you should be here at this point in your career and not where you're actually at type stuff. So that's been one of the big ones for sure.
Dude, that is the same for me. Exactly. Like getting further, you know, like when I did the last book, it was like it sold really well for anything I've ever done, you know. But after, I would say, you know, I sold a couple thousand copies of it or 1,000 copies of it or whatever it was, like, I was still like, it's not like a 10,000, you know. My brain was like, you're not Stephen King. You're still not, you know, moving buku numbers, and your online sales are good for you, but not where they like on Amazon or anything. I'll sell one there every now and then or something, you know. And I don't know. I just start getting this like, you have friends, you don't have like actual people who like your book. And it's not true. You know, right. It's like, I've sold a lot of these. Like, I don't fucking have 700 friends in real life, you know, right. Or anything. Like, I don't have 700 people I communicate with all week. But my expectations for myself are really like, just like, I have to sell out immediately, you know, right. Yeah. It's all or nothing, you know, yeah. Like,
I need to be on the New York Times bestseller list by morning or I'm fucked.
Like Nick Groom says, I'm just not into life. Like just one of those things where I need something to hit. And I just put so much pressure on myself. And that's when my writing starts to suck or my music starts to suck. Is when I like try to write for an audience instead of like writing for myself and putting it out and being myself. And, yeah. You know, I'm starting to understand that the people who like me for me. And sometimes they're not even buying the book because they're like excited about it. They're just excited I'm doing something. And when they read it, that's kind of the part for me that really gets me, is they end up enjoying it and then tell me they enjoy it. And, you know, that's the best feeling ever. And that's why I do it. You know, that, and to just show my kids that you can do fucking anything you want to if you try really hard. And, you know, you'll never catch me not trying.
That's one of the things you have to always go back to and remember, is that's what you're doing it for. Because we can all put those lofty goals and expectations on ourselves, but it just creates anxiety and panic and just... I mean, for someone like you who wrote your very first book and published it and it went out there and people started buying it, it's like you don't have a number that you should hit, right? Like you can sit there and be like, I need to sell a million copies. And you don't actually know if you do need to sell a million copies. You could sell 7 copies and it would still be great because those 7 people would enjoy it just as much as you want them to enjoy it, right?
Yeah. Well, and also I sit down and I think about things like this, like had I had somebody be like, hey, like my original deal was actually with a publisher and with a grant, but it was like a grant where I was obligated to pay it back after a certain amount of time. So I would have made that grant back easily with what I sold. But after they netted all my sales, I would have made way less like than I did just putting it out myself. You know, $20,000 isn't a lot of money in the grand scheme of things. Like, we're just taking a figure here. Like, say I made 20 grand. I made 20 grand on my own. That's fucking great. It's mostly all profit. Like, just the little bit that goes back into getting more books ordered or whatever is all that my cost was there. But with like somebody else, like the person that gave me the grant gets a cut. The publisher gets a cut. Mm-hmm. The person they paid to edit it gets a cut.
Yep.
Anybody that they needed for basically anything on it is getting a cut of my money. And then by the time it gets to me, that $20 bill that I'm supposed to get for each book turns into $6.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. And then I'm making even less than I did just like selling fucking, you know, my first demo out of my backpack, you know, and it's one of those things too. It's like, even if I had tremendous success, you'd never know because it's going to be the exact same money either way. I can sell, you know, I can sell 1,000 books on my own and get there, or I can sell 10,000 books through a publisher and get there to the exact same number.
Exactly.
So I try to think of it that way too when I get depressed about it. But how fucking cool would it be to have like a show made out of your book, or a stage show, or just anything? And like for me, like I just feel like I have to level up somehow, and I haven't done it in a while. Like, you know, I did the Chiefs thing and then moved up a little bit, And I started getting all these cool writing jobs, and then I kind of neglected music. So then I start thinking, I need to go back to music. Mm-hmm. And I start having these expectations of myself, like, you've quit as a musician because you're writing more now, you know? And I don't know. It's just like you're saying, you just feel like you have to level up or you should be doing more. And that's what I feel like all the time. Like, I always feel like I have to do more than I'm doing, or I'm a fucking loser.
And I don't know where that comes from. If I mean, because we both experience the same thing. I don't know. Like, no one's ever told me that you need to do this and do that to be successful and to be where you're at now. Like, that's never been ingrained in my mind. Like, my mom has never told me that, where she's like, you have to be here or you're a fucking failure.
I've seen your mom give you 4 days to mow a lawn that should have taken 20 minutes.
Exactly. So
your mom is definitely not.
And then instead of mowing the lawn, I made a fucking putting green in the back where she couldn't see. She wasn't too happy about that.
Completely unrelated. What I remember, a day your mom saw somebody doing something in the dumpster, but I can't remember what we did back there. But we all came around the house and she's like, what were you doing? Like, I saw you from the blah, blah, blah. But I was thinking about that the other day. I was trying to tell Sarah about, but I was like, I don't remember what happened. We were talking about stuff because of the whole cops video you sent me. For everybody listening, what I'm detailing is a video we made when we were bored, or Addison and Brett made when they were bored, of them pretending that they were on the show Cops. And I was like, I think everybody like had this impression of us as like the people who threw the shows and came to the shows. Like, Jacob even tells me, like, I always think you guys were so cool. And then I went over to Addison's, and all you guys did was like sit around and watch TV and play video games. Like, we didn't do anything cool at all.
Not at all.
Sorry to disappoint you. You're so weird, dude. Like, I just like, I wonder if other friend groups were as weird as we were, because we'd wake up one day and be like, you know what we should do in the basement? A UFC tournament.
Right. Exactly.
And I don't mean like playing this on Xbox. I mean, we're like, we're all fighters now. We're just gonna fight each other, and none of us fought, and we're good or anything. But this is the kind of crap we would do. We'd just get up and be like, you know what we're gonna do today? We're just gonna give each other headlocks and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to Michelle the other day. And I'm like, you know what? I really appreciate you putting up with me and Caleb and our bullshit. And she was like, you know, it's nothing compared to the bullshit I had to deal with you and Brett. I'm like, yeah, you're not wrong.
I remember we had a Monday night football watch party there, and it was Chiefs and Broncos, and Michelle came over. And she was like the only one rooting for the Broncos, and like they were scoring and we were all just pissed, just angry. And I wasn't saying anything, and you were just like, shut up, just shut up about the Broncos. Michelle hadn't said a word the whole time. She's like, I didn't even say anything. Get out of my house.
Get out.
Throws your own girlfriend out of the basement.
Oh man. That's when the Chiefs were how the Broncos are now.
Dude, how amazing is Patrick Mahomes, by the way? Like, I cannot even believe the game today.
Bro, you know what I thought of?
What?
Immediately after he got hurt and came back in, I thought about the time that you rolled your ankle. And you kept playing football that one day. And Caleb and I were like, oh, fuck my ankle. Oh, shit. Hero.
What can I say, man? Like, Mahomes channeled his inner me, okay?
Oh, my God, dude. Holy shit. Yeah. Hero. Yeah, he's something else, man.
That did not look like. What did you think of that play? Did you think that was a dirty play, or was that clean?
No, not at all. No.
I don't know, man. Like, I keep looking back at it, and like, I don't know. I remember how to properly sack a quarterback, and they tell you to not roll on their legs. And he literally looks right at the man's fucking ankle when he rolls on it. And I don't know if it was because he realized, oh shit, I rolled on his ankle, or if he did it on purpose. So.
Well, I think really we just wanted to get Chad Henning in there to throw a few balls in the playoffs. Dude,
I feel like, I don't know if you're the only Chiefs fan who feels this way about Chad Henne, but I feel like there's like one play a year, like where they're like, okay, we have to make Chad Henne earn his money. So we're just going to send you in for this drive and win us the playoff game, buddy. Cause he did it last year with when we played the Browns.
Well, that's how, isn't that how Matt Cassel got that, had that really great season? Because who was the quarterback that year that got hurt?
Tom Brady, because Matt Cassel was Tom Brady's backup.
Yep, you're right.
And we screwed ourselves on that one because we broke Tom Brady's ankle. And then he came in and we were like, Matt Cassel went 10-6. That's probably a franchise number for some reason. Even though the Patriots were fucking loaded is what happened.
That's say, he could throw to pretty much anyone on the team and they would have scored.
You know, like, I just think about that every day, like how like someone in the front office was like, Matt Cassel's the fucking answer. And then 3 years later, you fucking Aaron Hernandez couldn't cut that tension with a knife. You know? Oh, my God. Dude, it was just a lost cause, man.
Yeah.
Everything Matt Cassel's like memory in Kansas City is going to be jerseys with somebody else's name taped over the back of them. And that gif of him online trying to put a hat on where it falls off.
Oh, no. Yeah. Whatever. Well, the Broncos
expect the guy to throw the deep ball. He can't even put a fucking hat on his head.
No shit. Well, at least the Broncos are doing that now with Russell Wilson.
That is the cringiest man in football right there.
Yeah, Bronco fans are not happy over here in Colorado. They're not pleased with the Broncos. Not one bit.
I am, though. I hope they're terrible forever.
Yeah, no, I'm perfectly fine with it. And ticket prices are pretty low, so I may go see them next year.
See you on TV in the game. Yeah. Your sign is just write a random sign. Bob Holly is hot.
Yeah, I hope Nick sees this. That's like the only reason I would do that.
Oh my God. So we're back on the podcast. If you guys haven't realized, this is Tall, Dark, and Random. If you've haven't been listening for the last 38 minutes or however long it's been, 41 minutes.
41 minutes.
It was 38 when I looked a little bit ago. Nine miles to go on this one. I'm excited, man. I'm excited to be back doing this. It feels good to just talk and like get some shit off my chest because I feel, like I said, I'm my 2-year-old bartender inside. Yep. He tends no bar. He offers no drinks. He mostly just does things I tell him not to do over and over again.
Doesn't help.
Doesn't just like help all my friends. I give advice. They spray lotion all over the couch.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds disgusting.
My son sprayed lotion on the couch.
Oh, okay.
My son spills things. That did sound like a dearth.
I thought you gave an adult that advice, and that's what they did. I'm like, all right, that's cool. Weird. It's a weird flex, but okay.
That's a weird advice, but maybe I'll take that. Maybe I'll take that.
Listen, next time you're upset, just spray some lotion on the couch, and you'll be fine.
Lavender works best. Lavender. Lavender.
God.
So we're trying to make this a weekly thing again, I think.
Ooh, like, lofty.
Is that doable?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to.
Why don't we talk about your goals here as far as what are your goals? What are your intentions with this podcast? I may not let you take it on a date.
Well, I definitely want this podcast to have some substance and some purpose and some context and not let it revert to us watching fucking wrestling and saying, oh, that wasn't that funny. Hey, if you're at 100.22, you just saw Berserker come down from the fucking back, like stuff like that. And I think, you know, we've only said it for the entire time we've done this podcast is that we need to have fucking guests on here.
Yes,
man,
we do. Nobody I think we should, We should. We have quite a few people who want to be on, so maybe we should actually get the wheels.
No
in motion.
Shit, man. No one gives a fuck what we have to talk about after like 3 minutes. You know, we need somebody else to talk, so we can just be like, yeah.
I was telling somebody that the other day that I was like, we're really excited to like do the podcast again, but my problem, I think, with the podcast is I start delving into my problems and getting them off my chest, and then once they're done, like I'm kind of done. You know, like
yeah.
I don't really have a lot to talk about. Like I can help other people more so than, you know, just talking about my own situations all the time. And we could talk about that right now too. I've seen a lot of things going around about people like, oh, like try not to say a story about yourself that relates to the story when someone tells you their thing because they're going to be sad or whatever the fuck. Like, I don't like that at all. You know, like the thing that helps me is telling somebody like I'm like, oh, my fucking world is falling apart. And they're like, well, mine is, too, but I'm addicted to heroin. And then I go home and I think at least I'm not you, you know, or like whatever. You know what I mean? It makes me feel better to know that other people struggle. And like it's not me being happy about their struggle. It's just me being like, fuck, we're all in this fucking muck together. Mm. And if we just all help each other through, we're going to make it out. And I just feel like we're getting so cautious with people. Like you can't touch anyone with anything anymore. Like everybody's like, oh my God, Brendan Fraser's in a movie and it's fat shaming. And it's like, you know what? Being fat is unhealthy. I am an unhealthy person and I need to do something about it. And like, you know, I can fucking call myself on my bullshit. Like, it's great, but at the same time, like, we have to keep things in focus and remember, like, you can't fucking worry about hurting people's feelings all day, every day. Like, I'm sorry. Like, you can't change things all day, every day, too. It's just, like, the same thing. Like, I see older people I know in my life attempting to, like, ask people their pronouns and whatnot. And it's new to them, and they're learning. And if they don't get it right off the bat, don't fucking criticize them. Or yeah. If someone said the word faggot in fucking 2004, like, it sucks, and it's unfortunate, and it was a fucking terrible time where everyone said that shit all day long. But guess what? It's in the past, and it's over, and people can grow and move on and should not have their fucking lives ruined because they did something dumb when they were children. And I'm to that point with things, too, with, like, as far as my mental illness and whatnot. Like, are we really going to treat it, or are we just going to give it a fucking pillow? Like, that's how I feel about it.
Yep. Well, everybody's just so fucking sensitive, and everyone wants to walk on eggshells and not say what they actually want to say because they're afraid of ruffling feathers. And man, it's just if you were real with people and actually told them the truth instead of just what you think they want to hear, I really think that we would be a lot better off. And some people are not going to be receptive to that. And you got to know your audience, right? Like, I could say something to you and be brutally honest, and I know that you're going to take it just fine. But there are equal parts of people who I have attempted that same tactic that it did not go as planned and did not go as well. But I also don't give a fuck because I think people need to just understand that, you know what? I don't give a fuck what you are. I don't give a fuck what you stand for. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, any of that bullshit. I don't care. I look at you as a person. I am listening to your issues and your problems as a person, and I will give you the feedback that I think is appropriate for this conversation. And if you don't like it, then I don't give a fuck. And you can just go find some other advice and have someone else, you know, pat your ass and say, oh, it's going to be okay. You're going to be just fine. No, fuck that. We have too many soft people in this world. And some people need a dose of reality and an understanding that, hey, life is fucking hard for everybody. And you don't have it any worse off than other people. And your struggles are important to you, just like my struggles are important to me. And if you don't want to hear what I have to say, then don't fucking talk to me and just go away.
Dude, it's so true, though. Like, I don't know, man. It got to the point. I think that was some of the thing with the podcast, too, is like people were starting to like you know, turn in things to us that were like not our problem, you know, or be upset with us for opinions we had on here. And I just think of the Dave Chappelle thing that you clicked on my face, you know, like I didn't make you listen to this podcast. Like I want to talk about it because I haven't really, and I would never want to like ruffle feathers with like a friend of ours, but I had someone who was upset that we had a friend of mine who was upset that we had Roger on the podcast because he didn't think Roger needed to be on our podcast. And I'm like, well, that's really not for you to like decide, you know, like there's your side of what happened. And I think he knows a little more because he was there, you know, and knows what went down. And we know Roger's heart. And we know that, like, his plan was never to be one of these cops that you see on TV doing some fucking shitty shit. Mm-hmm. And, like, this is the way this man was trying to paint him to me. And we have not spoken since we had this conversation because I got so fucking irate about it and kind of went off. And, you know, to tell me that there's one side and that I need to be on that side or we're done, like, fuck you. Like, we're done having a conversation. We're done having a friendship. That fucking shit sailed with me. Like, if you can't even be man enough to have a fucking discourse about something and discuss it and move on from it when we're done, then I don't even need to fuck with you. You can go back to your little fucking whiny clubhouse or whatever the fuck it is you hang out with your fucking bullshit. But we're going to do what we want here. Like, this is our space, like a place right. where we can talk about shit and like talk about real shit. And I know that is a real difficult topic for people. And it's very triggering to talk about stuff like that. And those are the conversations I like to have because they're the ones that are hard for me to like have internally all day long. And then when we come here and have them, I feel so much better when we're done, you know? Yeah. Because you see that shit all day on TV. Horrible fucking shit. Like, you know what? Like, more so than guns, the biggest problem in the world is fucking every crime ever gets covered. Like, it's the most important thing ever. So every fucking idiot with a gun, every moron who's been picked on in school and can't move on from it, picks up a gun and goes somewhere and thinks, I'm going to get a fucking Netflix special one of these days and everyone's going to watch it and be a fan of it. And maybe the dude from American Horror Story will play me. That is the way people think. And it sucks. But that's what it is. And I just fucking, I don't know. We've kind of gone off the rails here. But
yeah, no, but I get it.
It upset me. It really upset me that like this dude has never met our friend and he's making assumptions based on something he read on fucking Reddit or fucking from some fucking girl he knows or whatever. Cause you know, that's most people, dude. Like they get on Facebook and they see a meme and they try to regurgitate it. And I had just seen the same meme 8 minutes earlier. So I know where the quote they were dying to tell someone came from. And I just don't get living your life like that without investigating things and looking into stuff and, you know, not just blatantly blurting out the first fucking thing that angers you or fucking triggered you that day. And I don't know. Like, I think with the podcast taking a hiatus, it was the best thing because for a while there, everything was triggering to me as far as listening to people bitch and listening to people try to tear one another down. When all we're trying to do here is have some fucking fun, man.
Exactly, you know? Dude. Exactly.
I want to talk about real shit and laugh about it and have a good time and understand that everyone listening, like who listens regularly, listens because they feel like we do and they just want a break, you know, like from whatever it is, from parenting, from work, whatever the fuck, this is a place to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you made mention that they're trying to tell you to take one side over the other. I'll tell you what, that shit does not fly. We're all adults here. I would never force feed an opinion or anything to you so that you would take my side over whatever other side there is. I think that's the most asinine and bullshit thing in the world is when people try and convince you that what you are thinking and your thoughts are wrong. And there's nothing that can be right about it until you decide that you're going to have the same opinion that they do. Fuck that. You can take your opinion and you can shove it straight up your ass because it doesn't matter what I think and it doesn't matter what you think. We can agree to disagree all we want, but we have to have that conversation, not just you force feeding some bullshit down my throat, hoping that I'm just like, yeah, you're right. That is a better point than what I thought. So I'm just going to change my mind. No, fuck that and fuck you. I don't have time for people like that. If you don't like it, don't fucking listen to the show. Hit stop and go listen to some murder mystery or some other bullshit to fill the empty void in your stupid ass life, you bitch ass.
I knew if I just kept pressing buttons, it was coming. There it is.
No, man, that shit pisses me off because, like you said, like I know Roger. I know Roger very, very well. And the last thing that Roger would have ever wanted to do is something like that. He would never, ever want to experience something like that in his life. And because he had the unfortunate circumstance of having to handle that and having to make that decision right then and there, that this person would probably never have the fucking balls to make on their own. Then until you're there, until you're in that moment, until you understand what's going on right in front of you and that you have to decide if you're going to save a life or take a life, then you can maybe talk about it. But until then, shut the fuck up and you have no room to talk and you have no business even bringing that up.
It's true. And that's how I felt about it. Like, that's something I've never had to fucking deal with, you know, as far as like, I've never had to be in a predicament like that. Like, my predicaments are much smaller. Like, I get to the store, they're out of Smuckers. What am I going to do? You know?
Yeah.
I get the grim, like, do I go back to the car and with no jelly or? How am I going to explain this when I get home?
Oh, like, no.
Dude, like, I just can't even fathom, like, having a job with extreme difficulty, especially where there's lives on the line and there's things on the line. And people treat it like it's just like a, hey, it's a sports team, like, go Broncos, go Chiefs. You know, like, that's how people treat everything. They treat politics like that. They treat situations like that. Like, there's two sides, but there's so many fucking gray areas to everything. It's like, how can you pick a side?
Yep.
Most of the time. Like, yeah. I think the people that I'm the most comfortable around are the ones who try to see the perspectives and try to understand, like, there's unfortunate things that happen sometimes. And the dude fucking did what he did, and whatever happened, happened. And
yeah,
like, that was not something he woke up and said, this is going to be what I'm going to do at work today. You know, it's not me. Like, I wasn't like, I'm going to get up and make coffee and sit in the office. Like, you know? I ain't doing jack shit.
Like, I'm going to watch wrestling from 1985 and send Addison screenshots.
That's really what I was doing when I was like managing the hotel. Like, I'm like, you know what I'm going to do? I fucking did everything yesterday. So I'm going to lock myself in my office and watch Netflix and get pissed anytime somebody calls and I have to pause it.
Oh, God. Well.
Woo! Man, we came out hot on this first one.
Yeah, we were actually worried about if we were actually going to be able to do it, period, if we remembered how to have a conversation like this. Dude, but I think we did okay.
I think we did fine, too, man. Like, you know, 1 minute we're just tearing it open, trying to see if we had it still, and all of a sudden there's lotion on the couch. I'm talking to a 2-year-old, and we're both fucking ranting our heads off. It seems like a typical episode of Tall, Dark, and Random.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Well,
I feel exhausted from having to like do this like on the fly and. A lot came out right there.
No, I think it worked.
I don't know, man. The only way to reel in an episode of Tall, Dark, and Random is with the song at the end of the show. And I hope that you have one on deck because we have not discussed a song at all.
Oh, we haven't.
We have not.
Hmm.
What you got? What do you have for me? And I think in honor of the rants that we've made for our dear friend, we have to make sure that he's going to go bounding down the speedway to something heavy this week. I
say less. Man, it's been so long since
We need something crucial stat.
Yeah, we do. Well, I'm looking through my playlist of Fuck Your Face Off mix. So that's,
I don't know how anyone takes us seriously ever. Like, why would you ever listen to this podcast and get mad at us, dude?
Like, just... All right, I got one. So to close out this show, one, I'm very happy to be back. You thought we were done. Ha ha. And I look forward to our future shows because I think we got a good thing coming. We'll probably make some stickers and some mugs and then we'll never send them out. So until then, that's all I have from my side.
All right, let's get to the song.
Oh,
Nick, and hopefully we will be here next week.
Yeah.
Depending on our young man over here and the need to make money doing his real job.
The young man.
This is all I got, man. Like, I'm fucking right now. I just moved and I'm adjusting to being here and just kind of doing my hustles, and I have all the time in the world to podcast, and I'm writing a book, and you know, this is my life now. So
good. Then at least you have time.
Yes. I think next week I'll do the show by myself, just talking to me, like, as you.
That sounds fine. And then just send it to me, and then I'll do a separate show of me talking to you, and then we'll just mix it together. It'll be fine.
I'm bringing back Bulk Hogan, too. It's happening.
God. Please do. All right, we're the fuck out of here. So the song of the week, Roger, turn your music up. Snake Father, Heretic's Fork. You already know it's going to fucking slap.
Oh, my God. Just the name, dude.
Okay, bye now.
Paradox of the Father. Fucking back! start is done!
The start is done!
Painful, you don't want to remember it. That's why you repress it.